Hi there, friends. This is your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, and you are listening to Playbill Presents The Broadway Cast. The Broadway Cast is a weekly podcast that brings the pages of Playbill to life and delivers it directly to theater fans around the world. Every episode will feature Broadway news and exclusive stories from the most notable Broadway personalities. Additionally, the Broadway Cast will give a voice to fans like they've never had before. On this week's episode of Playbill Presents The Broadway Cast, we welcome Eric Peterson, Jen Lyon, and Will Roland. But first, let's turn it over to Ruthie Fierberg and Felicia Fitzpatrick over at Playbill with our weekly Playbill Pulse.
All right, Ben, we're coming to you from the Playbill offices again.
What's going on, Ben?
We've had a ton of huge Broadway news. What a week.
It's been popping.
Mean Girls announced their casting.
We all need to beware of the plastics.
Yes, indeed.
Very indeed. Cruel.
So we've got Taylor Lauterman as our Regina George, Ashley Park, Gretchen Wieners, Kate Rockwell as Karen, and Erica Henningsen as Katie Heron. Katie, you decide. and she was apparently the youngest Fantine in Les Mis history.
Oh.
I know that's kind of cool. But by far, I am most excited to see Carrie Butler back.
Right.
Oh my God, she's playing Tina Fey's role, Miss Norbury.
So fetch.
Broadway HD announced some new titles, which includes falsettos. Falsettos will be available on the streaming service next month, August 14th. The Man Who Came to Dinner with Nathan Lane, that 2000 revival, is going to be available August 10th. And Long Day's Journey Into Night is already available as we speak. It's happening. So Broadway HD streaming, you know, more recent productions, which is really exciting, in addition to the live streams that they've done.
Bringing Broadway to the masses.
Amen. Oh, the Broadway Alzheimer's iPod Drive starting August 1st. Really important cause. They donate the iPods, chargers, Apple Music playing devices to an organization called Music in Memory that then has a training program and curates playlists and the like to help people with cognitive impairments kind of regain some of that soul and pieces of them that have been lost. So that drive is starting August 1st, and you can go to their Facebook page to find out about where you can drop off things or how you can make a donation to Music in Memory. Carmen Cusack.
Oh, my God.
Tony nominee.
Love her.
Going to reprise her Tony-nominated role in Bright Star out in California at the Amundsen in October, which does mean that she is going to be on our Iceland Playbill travel cruise instead of the previously mentioned Danube River cruise.
But
so
great.
We're not losing a performer. We're just, you know, shifting people
up.
Around.
Yeah.
Because when talented people book jobs, talented people book jobs. And if you want to go on a Playbill cruise, you can go to playbilltravel.com, find out who the other stars are, book your Broadway vacation dreams. And I did go, Felicia, to the Prince of Broadway press event.
How was it?
Life-changing.
Oh my gosh.
Life-changing.
I can only imagine.
I mean, to be in the presence of greatness.
And you had Jason Robert Brown on the keys, right?
Jason Robert Brown on the keys. Hal Prince giving the intro speech.
Oh, man.
You know, Susan Stroman in the room. And then that lineup of nine performers is incredible. I am so, so, so excited to see that show come to life. And really, 16 Hal Prince musicals come to life in one show.
Woo!
It's going to be epic.
Can't wait.
It's going to be epic. And Ben, that is all the Broadway news.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much, ladies. Can't wait to chat with you next week. Now, let's get on with the show.
Give my regards to Broadway.
A lullaby of Broadway.
There's a kid in the middle of nowhere who's sitting there living for Tony performances, singing and flipping along with the Pippins and Wickets and Kinkies, Matildas and Mormonses. So we might reassure that kid and do something to spur that kid. Because I promise you, all of us up here tonight, we were that kid and now we're big.
And we're weeping and we're crying because we all believe this to be the truest thing we ever heard. It's true. We were that kid. My inner child is alive. Hi, my beautiful Broadway BFF. It's your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, and you're listening to Playbill Presents The Broadway Cast. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, and by neighborhood, I mean Times Square, New York City, where we're recording live. As always, the energy of the city is electric, and today
So is our panel. Zip, zip. Oh, shocking. Get ready to giggle, guffaw, and snort if you must as we welcome some very funny folks from stage and screen. Let's start. Seated right next to me, he's the star of TV Land's Kirstie, Broadway's Peter and the Starcatcher, Shrek, and the current star of School of Rock playing Dewey Finn, Eric Peterson is here.
Woo!
Hello. Hello.
You're over at the School of Rock, yes.
I am, yes. Yeah,
yes. Yeah. How's it going?
It's going great. We're having a good time, doing 8 shows a week, rocking out, having lots of kids in the audience and on stage.
And that's my question for you right off the bat. Tell me about working with so many children, and showbiz children at that, which is an interesting thing.
Yeah, but you know what? They are showbiz kids, but I'll say when they cast our show, they really try to get musicians more than actors, because we have a few that are actors, and you can tell. Right, I love all of them. I love every single one of
them. It's the old, I can see you acting
moment. Right, but like they try to get like real kids that are actually really good at playing instruments, and then they teach them to act, and they really kind of encourage them to make choices each night and to feel things originally and not feel like they're in a box. So I really like working with them, and we have some kids that are like true prodigies and could be little jerks, but they're not.
Yeah.
So we have fun. I like working with them.
That little Brandon, right?
He's
into
legit.
A zone that's crazy.
Did you know that he plays a different solo every night in the show?
I did not know that.
Yeah. So he has a couple different solos in the show, and some of them are usually somewhat the same, but his big solo at the end, he plays a different thing every night, and he has the freedom to do that because he's so talented. Like, I play a solo, but mine is exactly the same every night that I learned enough to play, right? But there was one night he played with his teeth. He just, like, picked up his guitar and was playing with his teeth, and as he walked back upstage, I was like, did you play with your teeth? And he was like, yeah, I just tried it. And I was like,
I just tried it?
Yeah, he had never done it before.
And who is the dulcet tones? Who is that? That star of Broadway's The Coast of Utopia, Fish in the Dark. You've loved her on TV as Mackenzie Bradford Lopez on St. George on Justified. And you can see her every week on the new TNT series, Claws, Jen Lyon!
Hello.
Welcome to the Broadway cast.
Thank you.
And can we get, I know that the people at home can't see this, but the nails are on fleek.
Well, I just glued them on right before I got here.
You did? But just, they seem to
I have like hands that know manual labor. So like they're very scruffy and gross. Yeah. So I was like, well, I'm on a show called Claws. I need to, like, you know, do something.
Absolutely. The show is out, and people are responding really positively to it.
Yeah.
Is this so exciting?
It's very exciting, yes. It's super exciting, especially because it's about, like, 5 women. And it's kind of like a female Scarface in a way. Like, usually when you're a woman in a show, you're, like, attached to the man that's doing the shit. But in this, the women are doing the shit.
Uh-huh.
And the men are sort of like reacting to that, and I think that that's super interesting.
That's super fun. Yeah. What's it like seeing your face in giant billboards in Times Square? I think right above the Winter Garden, there's a big clause.
I haven't even seen it. I just got back from New Orleans on Sunday, so I'm gonna go see it after this.
Yeah, just take a walk uptown. You're gonna love it. I love it. Seated next to Jen Lyon, he is a scene stealer from Dear Evan Hansen. He's dancing. He plays Jared Kleiman. This is Will Roland.
Oh my God!
Hi, Will.
Hi, Ben.
Will, congratulations on being a Dear Evan Hansen, the biggest hit musical going these days.
Thanks, man.
Is that a fun ride?
It's a blast. It's like, you know, I get to, like, for those of you who know anything about the show, it's like...
They all know, Will.
I know.
Everybody knows, God.
It's heavy. It's a heavy show.
Sure.
But, like, not me. I'm
not
just
you.
Having fun. Just
I know. You really are just having fun.
Telling jokes.
People... Oh. In
That's
a word,
life,
man.
Yeah.
That's life. The people, the fans are totally out of their minds for the show. The reaction from the fan base has been so over the top. Can you just give us a quick, very memorable fan interaction?
We've had a lot of fun. It's kind of ironic because our show is like kind of weighs in a little negatively on social media, but I've really enjoyed the social media interactions. I've learned that these things sort of take on a life of their own, and I see like these kids post things that I like a crazy like crossover fiction where like I'm Jared Kleiman, but I'm also like in like Heathers. Like they love Heathers. They love Dear Evan Hansen. They love Be More Chill, the like Joe Icona show that played for a month in New Jersey that nobody went to see, but was really great. And like they'll write these like crazy stories about like my character and George Salazar's character like being best friends and like
fan fiction. So cool.
I think that is so fun.
Nobody knows like where Jared Kleiman ends and Will Roland begins, and so it's like these weird amalgams of like, is it me? Is it my character? It all feels very strange, but like it's cool.
All right, it's time to have a little bit of fun. We like to start off our show with a little bit of a game. So today, and I think this is going to go very well given our conversations to this point, we're going to start by playing a game called Making a Musical. We're going to put your improv skills to the test. Okay. It's the first rule of improv, yes, and so this is how it's going to work. We're going to go around the panel in a round robin style, as we describe the plot of the new Rodgers and Hammerstein electropop musical sensation that is called Dear School of Claws.
Sure.
See what we did there?
Sure. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, you each only get one word at a time as we pass around and we describe the plot of Dear School of Claws. Everybody, who would like to begin? Eric, would you like to start us off?
Sure.
Fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, Dear School of Claws.
Once.
Ladies.
Went.
To.
Work.
And.
They.
Blazed.
A.
Huge.
Trail.
Which.
Led.
Us.
To.
The.
Place.
Where.
Everyone.
Lived.
Afterward.
Everyone.
Was that the end of Act 1?
Yeah,
yeah, that was the end of Act 1.
Intermission.
Top of Act 2, grabbing some wine.
Afterward.
Afterward. Everyone.
Showered.
With.
Each.
Other.
And.
Found.
That.
They.
Could.
Have.
Fun.
Together.
This is going well.
I'm really excited about it.
Someone's
it sounds
writing
a little
fan fiction about it.
Absolutely,
right?
It sounds a little racy. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
It sounds like itself. It's a very empowering musical,
well,
but maybe a little racy in the second act.
It's got like a dash of Old Calcutta.
Yeah,
just a little bit.
And just a nuance of Caligula thrown in. But mostly in the second act, it sounds
like.
Exactly,
when they're showering together.
And that, it's a big budget musical, obviously, with
huge.
The shower scene.
Oh, yeah.
With that deluge curtain that comes down.
Yeah.
And a big trail that they blaze.
That was, yes,
yeah,
there's fire in the first act.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, this is about $17 million musical.
You know, the shower scene's very controversial.
It is.
Yeah.
It says
absolutely.
A lot about humanity and our connection to each other.
See, we're connecting currently.
Nice,
well, can each of you tell me the name of your favorite song from the show?
Wow, the shower is fun. It's like a big number that's tapping at the end.
Absolutely. In the water.
Yeah.
It's singing in the rain.
That's cool.
Exactly.
Sure.
Big
meet showgirls.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite number, Jen?
I guess my favorite number from the show would be the 11 o'clock number, Nails Upon Us. It's like about nails, but it's also about like nails.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of religious overtone. It's like, it's tough. And it's also about the railroad.
So, Underground Railroad? Or
both,
just
all of them. Every railroad. Every railroad.
All the railroads.
Yeah.
Railroad apartments.
Yeah.
It's about that.
Getting railroaded, like, in life, you know? It's like, man, I got railroaded.
Do you know that this musical is noted for having the most overtones of any musical?
It's all subtext.
All overtones.
The text makes no sense.
Yeah.
People are barely talking to each other. The subtext is
plugged in. Oh, you can feel it.
What's your favorite number, Eric?
Mine is that silly, the like up-tempo in Act 1, Blaze That Trail, Mofo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like such a great like buddy cop moment.
Yeah. But it's like, Blaze That Trail, Mofo.
Yeah.
Like it's
a patter song.
It's a patter song.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great way to ease into it,
it's a good
right?
audition piece. I've used it.
Absolutely.
It cuts well.
So
you do 16 bars, no problem.
Yeah. There's a lot of good cuts in it.
Yeah.
I hope it doesn't get cut.
It can't.
It's the opening number. That's what inspired the entire musical.
Right.
Well, tickets for Dear School of Claws are available on your local street corner from the guy wearing the Elsa costume. So, and holding the sign that says free comedy show. So make sure you get your tickets now. Oh, that was more satisfying than I dreamed it could be. I can't wait to see the show. All
story
right,
of my
friends.
Life.
Let's start at the very beginning.
A very good place to start.
Yes, and... as each of you, obviously, incredibly gifted comedians and actors and really
somewhat.
Somewhat.
After that joke.
But what was your earliest memory of seeing a performance, could be on stage or could be in film, that you said, oh, that's funny, I can do that, or that made you want to make people laugh? Eric?
Sure. I mean, I remember the first, like, I did a Ronald Reagan impression in preschool.
Mine's an impression,
and it was just that I said, well, and I like just from SNL, you know, it's I just shook on. My face and went, well, I had like a plastic bag over my body with a tie drawn on it, and I was in a preschool little thing, and I was like, well, we must do this, and it killed, and I was like, oh, that's really good. So, yeah, and then I the next one I did was in sixth grade. I did, not sixth grade, fourth, I don't know, somewhere in there.
You took a break.
Yeah, I took a little break from comedy. It was too stressful. But then, no, I did, again, off SNL, I made like three little paper plates of Bill Clinton, George H.W. Bush, and Ross Perot.
So beautiful.
And I did like a little presentation in my class of the debates that, and I stole it all from SNL, but I like did the impressions of all of them. And
right.
And I was like, oh, maybe I can do this.
Wow.
This comes naturally.
I'm with Jen. I'm surprised
you're
at
like
that
a
age.
Satirist.
Yeah, yeah, so politically really, minded.
That's cerebral.
Yeah, I guess so.
That
yeah.
is cerebral.
I was like poop jokes at that point.
Will, what was your, what was the first?
The first time that I ever that I can recall registering, like, oh, that was funny. Like, people enjoyed that. Was I learned to do a great Jimmy Stewart when I was young, and I like to this day can recite nearly every line of "It's a Wonderful Life."
I'm also, open to
but
that.
But like my whole youth was like, I'd say they're like, "Oh, please, Clarence, I want to live again. Please let me live again." You know, George Bailey, you're worth more dead than alive. It's my Lionel Barrymore, my Jimmy Stewart. God. They're flawless.
Now, Will, they're clearly flawless.
Just closing up the library, you know. It's like,
what? How old were you when you were doing this?
It's like a 6-7, you know, that kind of age. Like, just old enough that I've digested a load of cartoons.
Yeah.
And I've, like, learned, like, oh, this is a serious thing, but when I do it, it's funny because I'm small.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
people are impressed by the novelty of it.
And mostly, were you getting reaction from adults or from
yeah,
the other
adults.
Kids?
Like, my parents would be like, do the It's a Wonderful Life thing. Oh, please, Clarence, I would laugh. I'm so beloved.
Yeah. You know? That's really it, isn't it? I'm so beloved.
And I'm just chasing it.
Yeah. Well, tell us, Jen. Tell us your first moment.
I can remember being in, like, first grade, and we would have nap time, and you got one token if you rested, but two tokens if you slept.
What are the tokens worth?
Well, I'm very prize motivated, and you could take them to a shop that was in the corner near the hamster cage and get a comb or a bouncy ball, something great.
It's like being a Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, exactly. Great. Yeah. And I was laying down, and I would always lay on my stomach, and I did this joke probably every day, but at a different time, and it slayed every time. I would lay flat on my stomach and pretend to be asleep. I would wait for the perfect moment, and I had a blanket over me. And at any given moment during nap, I would shoot my butt up high in the air till it made like a triangle tent, just but silently. So like all of a sudden, it would be like a tent, and it was me, and it slayed.
Wait, that does kill.
Do, like, a fart noise?
No, nothing. I would just be like, and there'd be a triangle.
That's some
where there never was a triangle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it would, and like kids would wait for it. Oh, you know what I mean? They'd be like, "Are you gonna do it today?" And I'd be like, "You know, I'm gonna do it today." And then she couldn't put me in the corner because that's where I did my best work.
So I'm gonna guess. Played in the round, you know, being at the entrance is the strongest.
The strongest point.
So I'm gonna guess you probably didn't get many tokens.
I never got to go to the shop.
You didn't get to. No, yeah. You didn't have a big cone collection at the end of this.
These are all really sophisticated. Like,
I know.
This is that high-end humor that we were doing at 6 and 7 years old.
Yeah, which is interesting that it feels like it's probably something very innate within all of you.
Sure.
That's kind
we're
of
very smart.
It takes a very smart person to be very funny, I think, doesn't it?
I like to think so.
I hope so.
Well, so what is so intoxicating about getting a laugh? I mean, I know I can speak for myself when I do my shows that I think I get more out of that than just about anything. Having something come from your brain out there that gets that response.
I think it's that you can tell when a laugh is forced, when an audience is going, "Oh, that was a joke. Our duty is to laugh here," and they'll go, "Haha," and that doesn't give you anything.
Right.
But when you can surprise them and hear that really honest guttural chortle from like a guy, especially when it's like one or two people in the audience,
like a distinct
laugh. Who's like, ah! You know, like that, and
that's
it's usually
me. I'm that guy.
I love that because that is an involuntary response where someone was just observing what you were doing and couldn't help but respond. And I think that's what's so great and so intoxicating.
Yeah, Jen.
I think because I love laughing so much, and it's really the only time I really have a sense of abandon. Without drugs, alcohol, men. It all started when my dad lost his job. No, you know what I mean? No, it's like that's when you feel you are there's something so special about laughing. And so if you can really make somebody else do it, oh God.
Yeah.
It just feels great.
Yeah. I have like a weirdly kumbaya sort of thought about it. Michael Jackson kumbaya. No, I love feeling the audience's presence in the room. It feels very communal. And I like it is so much easier for me to do the show when there are like responses to things because it makes me feel like, oh, they're listening. Mm. And when I tell my story, it's going to be more well received. Like people are, it's going to mean more to these people because they're actively engaged and involved in it. Mm-hmm. Especially with Dear Evan Hansen, it like gets heavy near the end. And it feels like the more they laugh at the beginning, the more open they are when it sort of gets there later on.
What do you do when you start? What if you have those shows where like you just, there's just rustling?
Oh, I'm just cursing off stage the whole time. I actually find that I slow down so that they feel the silence. Much to Michael Greif's chagrin.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I'll sort of let the silence, the non-silence, hang out there a little bit more because it feels like it settles the room a little. Or I'll speak very quickly so it feels like they have to, like...
You got to catch up now.
Get in it.
I think sometimes an audience, it's not always the case. Sometimes you're just doing bad work and they just don't think it's funny, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes I think, I have a theory that they don't laugh, especially if you have a lot of tourists who maybe don't go to the theater a lot, because A, they're unsure of theater etiquette, and they feel like, oh, I should just be here and listen, A. B, I think they don't want to miss anything. Mm. And so there's like something that stifles in them. So I think it's our job to like make them, and like you were saying, like slowing down sometimes and just giving them that sense that like, you're safe with us. We're not going to leave you hanging, like, just come along with the ride. But I think sometimes that's where it is. It's not, sometimes you just suck and aren't funny.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes it is. It's an audience is like they don't want to miss anything.
And do you ever have those experiences where you're done with the show? Where you're like, well, this audience sucked, and then you get on stage for curtain calls,
and the
roar is outrageous.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
We're like, God, why do we even do this?
It was a waste of our time and theirs, apparently.
Yeah. Somebody told me once, and I use this all the time, whenever there's like a quote-unquote bad audience, I always say, hey, guys, you can't hear smiles. It's so gross.
Especially when the smile's in their heart.
That's right.
Oh, my God.
Somebody said it once. I was like, man, that audience sucked. And they're like, hey, you can't hear smiles.
Kumbaya, my lord.
Oh, my God.
Who are your inspirations comedically? Who do you look up to and who did you at one point aspire to be like or take your cues from? Will?
I gotta put, not all these people are crazy funny, but Steve Buscemi is a big inspiration. Mm. Jerry Orbach.
Oh.
Rick Moranis. Carol Burnett.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm a big fan of like nice broad comedy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like Steve Martin.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Steve Martin is like the funniest.
Yeah. The king.
I could go on all day. Sure. You don't keep naming people who I think are funny. I'm going to steal everyone else's.
Go for it, Jen.
Madeline Kahn, Judy Holliday.
Oh, my goodness.
The guys from Carol Burnett Show. Harvey and who's
Tim.
Oh, my God. Yeah. When I was a little girl, I would cry laughing at that stuff. And also, I had Bill Cosby's headshot in my bathroom forever because I love him and I grew up on his records. But now it feels like it's not, you can't separate the art from what he did, but he was a huge inspiration for me.
Mm. Yeah. Absolutely.
As a black man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a poor black child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine are probably Robin Williams is number one for me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Gospel.
Chris Farley. I love Will Ferrell. I mean, I know
that's
not good, but I mean,
Will
like,
Ferrell, who's funnier?
What I love about Will Ferrell is not only can he play the straight man, but like, I love his commitment to complete outlandish, and maybe not outlandish, complete awkwardness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he will sit in a joke and wait for you to come
catch
to him, and he will not give you, there is no sense of like, okay, well, I'll change it to make it a little easier for you. It's like, he's like, this is the weird thing I'm going to do, and I'm going to commit to this until you guys come get on board. I love that.
He's fearless.
So much.
Also, Amy Sedaris. Jesus Amy Sedaris.
Yeah. It makes me think of Will Ferrell. Hasn't he gone on several talk shows in character?
And he does it all the time.
And refuses to budge.
Acknowledge it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
so
the Goulet
funny.
Thing and all that.
Yeah.
So having these early inspirations, the Goulet,
Red Chips of Spain,
Red Chips of Spain.
If you're a true player, Goulet.
So once you guys found out that you liked getting laughs, what was the road that brought you then to the Broadway stage? What was your theater life?
For me, it was a lot about school. I was never like a community or professional theater person until I was done with school. And then out of school, it's a lot of like readings of new plays and new musicals and like concerts at, you know, the Beachman and 54 Below and things like that. I did a show called The Black Suits a couple of years ago, with Joey Conness. You didn't like it?
I don't like it.
That's so sad. where I played like almost the exact same character that I'm currently playing on Broadway, but like nicer.
Okay.
And then like this, you know, this show right now, I've been working on it for like 3 years. Yeah, we did like some readings and workshops and all that stuff.
What a fantastic payoff to put 3 years into something and then to see it materialize.
Yeah. I can't wait for the next thing to be not as good. Thinking about that a lot these days.
The good news is it's all downhill from here. Jen, what about you?
Church. My dad's a preacher, so I was always the loud angel. I never got to be Mary because he didn't want to show favoritism. So I was always the loud-ass angel that was like, behold, we bring you good tidings of great joy. The tale.
You know the one.
And then I did some like community theater.
What were your community theater roles?
I played Mary Magdalene in Godspell when I was 15.
Oh, yeah.
They had to ask my dad for permission. Oh, congregation was in an uproar.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I mean.
Shaking of their boots.
High Point, North Carolina. It's the furniture capital of the world. There is a set of bureau drawers, and you can get at them. You can get right in there.
Yeah, they're that big that you can put your human body inside of them?
And also, the next town over is the biggest chair you ever seen. That's Thomasville.
Is it the biggest chair ever or the biggest chair you ever seen?
Both.
Because there's a distinction.
You're falling in a forest, and there's nobody around.
And then I went to School of the Arts. I got kicked out of
North Carolina School of the Arts,
I went on a circuitous route, but then I went to School of the Arts, and they saved my life. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. Boot camped me. And then I came to New York.
Yeah. Eric?
I was cross-eyed as a kid. I had eye surgery when I was 18, so I look a little better now. But so I really used comedy as like a defense mechanism.
Like cross-eyed,
like
Marty
like
Feldman?
Cross-eyed.
Like, he was like wall-eyed.
Yeah, mine went in. I have strabismus, which means I can only see out of one eye at a time.
Which is a spelling bee joke.
I was in spelling bee, and it was very funny because when it came up as like, look at these weird kids, I was like, I had that. I still do. You know. So anyways, because of that, I got teased quite a bit, and I think most comedians go to comedy from a defense kind of place, right? So, I mean, I didn't start doing theater until high school, but I had always been like the class clown because I had the idea that if I got them to laugh with me and not at me, it kept me safer, you know? So I would throw myself into lockers, and I learned very early on the trick of kicking a door and then making it look like it hit your head, and like, you know, and it would kill, and that's what I would do. So I started doing theater in high school. Still didn't think I would do it as a career. And then
that change?
Like my senior year, once I started playing the lead in a lot of shows, I was like, oh, maybe I'm okay at this.
Positive reinforcement.
Right. And then I was like, well, I'll go to school for it. And then I was like, well, all right, now this is what I want to do. So then I went to college, to a little school in Peoria, Illinois, and then my plan was to move to L.A. After college, but I met a girl at Summerstock who turned out to be my wife. But at the
showman,
It was
what
funny.
Show were you guys doing?
We were doing Rocky Horror at the time.
What could be sexier?
She was Columbia, and I was like random Transylvanian number 8, you know?
Yeah.
And I tried to get her to date me for a while, and then eventually she did, and she said, this is a summer fling, and then we're done at the end of the summer. And I said, all right, we'll see. And then I said, what are you doing at the end of the summer? She said, I'm moving to New York. And I was like, I'm moving to New York too.
What a happy accident.
Yeah. Stalking then, your way to love.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it worked out. We have two kids now. We'll be married 10 years this year. So, I mean, it was good. It was a good call. But yeah, I just kind of started doing comedy. It came most naturally to me. And then I did Spelling Bee. I did the first national tour of Spelling Bee, which was really fun. And Shrek. So I do a lot of these really kind of goofy kind of shows, I guess.
Yeah. Are you in a show? I know you are. Do you want to add some Broadway flair to your school or community theater production? Well, Playbuilder lets you build your very own Broadway quality Playbill program.
Each playbill is fully customizable for your production. Dates, song title, cast names, production credits, artwork, and even advertising. It's a great way to promote your show, raise money for your organization, and create a professional, printable program. Save valuable time with Playbuilder Express. Select from thousands of pre-populated programs in our database and simply begin to customize your production's playbill. Visit Playbuilder.com to learn how you can create your own playbill today.
Yeah. Do you guys recall once you arrived on the Broadway, do you remember the first time that you opened up a playbill and saw your name in there? And what was that experience like?
I sent it home to my mom. I like put it in the mail immediately.
Yeah.
Even though she didn't know like what a big deal it was.
Yeah.
Did she not?
No, I don't think they really I mean, she knew it was Broadway and everything, but I don't think she knew what playbill means. Because like if you ever go to that's the special book, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in the special, I was just like over the moon about it.
I don't remember that, but I do remember my first moment of being in like a press release that was on Playbill.
Uh-huh.
And that seemed like a huge deal to me.
Fully clickable and searchable.
Yeah, on like playbill.com, it's, I think it was one of the tour of Spelling Bee or something, but it was like Eric Peterson to co-star. And I was like, Playbill. Like that felt real to me. That felt really.
And then you start pushing the share button like crazy.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
yeah. How else are you going to get lost in the algorithm if you don't push the share button?
Right. Me, it was like, I just sort of like sat and looked at it for a while. I was like, oh, this is nice. It was. We had Michael Park, who plays the dad in our play, sort of came around and passed him out to everybody. It's like, here you go. Hold on to that. It's a big deal. And I was like, oh my God, it's a big deal. Like in the first preview, I went and got a stack and made sure we had one. And it was like,
That's cool.
Do you have several in your home collection?
Oh my God, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
They're inescapable. It's like when you go to the beach and you just find sand everywhere.
Yeah.
That's how I am with Dear Evan Hansen. Playbills and stationery and sweatshirts and hats and pencils.
He's running
and
merch out of his apartment.
Yeah, I like the idea that you get.
I've got it all.
You get home from your Broadway show and take off your pants, and oh, there's another playbill fell out of my undershorts. I was going to kick that one to the side. This one goes in the drawer, the special drawer. I'm going to need a bigger drawer. I'll go to North Carolina. They've got big drawers.
Big drawers.
For you guys, does the word comedian or comic, is that something that resonates with you, or do you think of yourself as an actor who's funny? Where does that fall for you, Eric?
I think of myself as an actor who's funny, but if I ever see in like anything like comedian Eric Peterson, it actually, speaking about like moments that kind of like hit you, that whenever I've seen that, and it's not a lot, but occasionally, you know, in even just an email for something like this, it'll be like the comedian, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
That's when I go, oh, wow, like that is.
It's working.
It's like a badge of honor.
Yeah, like that's who I am, you know?
Yeah, the same. I mean, I would like to consider myself, you know, that I have the chops to do whatever, but when somebody says comedian, it's like makes me feel super special.
Well,
I'm in the exact same boat. Like I sort of like people will say like, oh, like, you know, you should do like, you know, this or that, you know, like, and I'm like, oh no, that's for comedians. It's like comedic training. You know, like I think about like people who have a lot of like improv or stand up or sketch experience. It's like a whole different set of skills that I'm like dumbfounded by. I'm like, I'm an actor. I just say what people tell me to say, and sometimes they laugh, but also when they don't, not my fault.
I can pass the buck.
Yeah, there's a certain sort of like, well, if it were written better, you know, but if you did it all, you're SOL.
Yeah.
No, but comedian is a, it's if someone says like comedian or, you know, I'm like, oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Me, Will Roland, comedian.
Well, and what's, since you bring that up, what is kind of your process when you get text that is comic text? How do you then, because there's a million ways to interpret everything, I suppose, how do you go about infusing your wit and your brand of humor into that?
I'm very like by the book. I'm very like, why am I saying this? And like, you know, like fundamentals of acting class, because I don't have a lot of acting training.
Yeah.
But also I'm like very like cheap about it. I'm very musical. I'm the guy who's like, you broke your arm? You broke your arm. You broke your arm? Like I literally do that.
Yeah, cadence and pitch.
Yeah, it's a lot about cadence and pitch and rhythm for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then finding a true way to sort of get the right pitch, cadence, rhythm in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like my favorite thing in the whole world is when like a writer has written a joke and they like know it's funny, but then I say it and they're like, oh, I didn't realize it was that funny. It's like my favorite thing in the whole world.
Or they hear it in a way that they didn't even think it could be funny.
Exactly.
Maybe.
Yeah. Like they thought it was kind of like a clunker of a line or just like, you know, not a line that they thought much about. And it's like a great line.
Yeah. Jen, how about you?
I feel the same way about like pitch, cadence. Like you can take a line that's not even funny and just turn it a little bit at the end and like when you are, like, when you've done a lot of comedy, it's sort of, I don't have any other skills, but jokes and stuff like that appears to me like a beautiful mind. You know what I mean?
It's yeah.
like,
yeah.
it becomes golden and I just know how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, but you do, you have to practice,
mm-hmm.
you know, or yeah. sometimes I'll want to do something that's arbitrarily funny and I know it's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to make it make sense. I'm like, well, no, she would drop her voice an octave because it's very serious. And I'll be like, don't do it. You know what I mean? Even though it's like, why would you do that? But
right.
like, I'll try to find a way to make it absurd enough to work.
And unexpected.
Yeah.
yeah.
How about you, Eric?
I was lucky enough to do a pilot that didn't happen, but James Burroughs, who's like the most
the god,
you know, oh,
the
geez.
Legendary director and creator of Cheers and
yeah,
you know, a thousand other shows, a million other shows, and he directed the pilot. And people told me this about him, but it was a very cool little thing. Once you do rehearsals, once you're on tape night or dress rehearsal. If let's say we're in the living room set, he walks over to the kitchen set, or he walks totally away where he's over by himself, and he just listens. He doesn't need to watch the performances because he figures you're actors, you're going to stay on the stage,
yeah.
you're going to pick up whatever you're supposed to pick up. For him, it's all about, as we were talking about, the rhythm, and it's just listening. And so he'll just sit there in the dark and he listens. He'll say, nope, cut that joke, doesn't work. Nope, that's good. Okay, cut that. Cut the third word in that. Like, it's mathematical to him.
Interesting.
And I've always thought very similarly that it is a mathematical yep. thing. And when you're saying about Beautiful Mind, like,
mm-hmm. it emerges.
It just is so clear to me, like, this is how you should say it. There, I mean, I've had fights with directors or stage managers where they'll be like, but I think it should be this. I'm like, that is wrong. Like, it's
I know.
1 + 1 = 2 in comedy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there's a better joke for that, but like, there are, yes, you could say it that way, but if you really want to get
the laugh,
this is how you got to do it, you know? And there are nuances that you can change within that, but like, timing. Oh, it's
you know what
huge.
I mean? Like, if you say the line and shut the drawer, yep. or if you shut the drawer and say the line, like, it's the world
of difference.
Totally different.
Yeah.
I have one line in the show where I say, literally nothing I tell my parents is true, and they have mm-hmm. no idea. And Michael Greif one day was like, just stress the word literally. If I don't do that, it does not get a laugh.
Mm-hmm.
If I stress literally, it gets a laugh.
Yeah.
I don't know why. To this day, I was saying this to the guy who understudies me. There, yeah. I was like, you really got to stress literally because it doesn't work otherwise.
Yeah.
And he's like, why? I go, I don't know why. But I've done
just
a lot of
previews
of this
show.
Just
the way the word plays, literally.
Literally nothing I tell my parents is true. And you would want to stress nothing. It doesn't make any sense.
But you've all played dramatic roles as well in your lives, and what's the difference there?
This is sort of a corny road answer, but they're not that far apart. I mean, it's really, it's
not.
The work that you do to prepare the role and to prepare the scenes, and the, you know, the job is the job. Like, getting ready to do a scene and play it truthfully and, like, in the way that flatters the piece and you and the writing and everything is, like, the work is often the same. It's more about saying, like, oh, we're in this world, we're in that world. Like, if you hand me, like, Hamlet, like, parts of it are funny and parts of it are not. And that has nothing to do with what I do. I'm just supposed to play it truthfully.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think they're not dissimilar.
Yeah.
But oftentimes, I feel like most of the comedians I know can do drama just as easily.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like if you're not funny, then trying
to
get
that
funny
is
really woof.
Yeah.
It can be real awkward.
It's tough.
Yeah. And that's, I think, where this kind of innate sense of rhythm and talent that you guys all kind of was coming out of you at 6 or 7 years old comes into play.
I think that, like, in drama, when I've done dramatic pieces, I'm probably a bit more, frankly, in the moment, being a better actor, of, like, really, like, letting things, hit me and try to hear them for the first time and all those things and let, like, whatever emotion comes out of me not be as planned. Whereas when I'm doing comedic stuff, I think I fake it a bit more of being in the moment, but I am sort of, like, self-directing
myself. You're monitoring it a little
while. Like, I'm watching, like, okay, well, I'm listening to what you're saying and I'm in the moment, but I'm also setting up for this joke that's coming three lines later, you know?
Right.
Whereas when I'm doing dramatic stuff, it is more just like, let's just see what happens, and you don't want to push an emotion that's not there and all those kind of things.
I think that that's probably true. Because like in comedy, it's just so specific. Like you don't walk on somebody else's setup. Yeah. You don't turn your head before, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like it's scientific on a stage, definitely.
Yeah.
Because you want the audience to focus where you want them to focus.
Yeah.
And you've always got an eye out and an ear out and like... Yeah.
Right,
but
navigating it.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of true, because when you're in a dramatic thing, you're just like...
Just in it.
Yeah.
Just zoomed.
Well, and you say especially on a stage, what are the differences as opposed to playing comedy on film?
I mean, it is definitely different. You know, I remember when I was doing the Kirstie show, Michael Richards came out to me, and he in our first day, he was like, you can't play to the 400 people that are here.
Yeah.
Like, they're laughing, that's great. You got to think about the 2 million people that are in the lens. So he was like, just wait, let the, you know, and stage, we're like, ride the laugh and then jump off to the top, right? And he was like, you got to give it a bit more space. Like, don't play it so broad. Like, just zoom it in, be nuanced. The camera's right there. And that was like, for me, it took some changing of my sort of mechanism to do that.
Yeah.
But it is, I mean, it's just about, you can do a lot of things on screen that you can't do on a stage, because you can be so much more nuanced, and you can do a lot more with the raise of an eyebrow, with the turn of a chin a little bit, a breath. I mean, these little things that would never read on a Broadway stage, but on, you know, a TV show can be very funny.
You have thoughts on that, Jen?
Yeah, I mean, when you're on the TV, the cameras, you don't know how it's going to cut together, you know.
Right.
You don't know what's going to happen. But when you're on stage, like, that shit is under your control.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's not. But it is. You know what I mean? Like, you've got all these people in a line. You know what I mean? So, like, you know that the way you turn your body, you know, whatever. But on camera, I think you're right. You have to, or I had to, really scale it back. Because I play to the check cashing place across the street.
I just had to
really like rein it in.
Are there tricks to bringing comedy into song?
It's so hard, because you know, people don't know how to listen to lyrics.
That's true.
They just don't.
They listen to the feeling of
and
a song.
So like once a week, I've got this there's like three jokes that land like once a week, because like there's enough people there that understand you should listen to the words that they sing rather than just like watch and like.
What is that moment?
It's the kinky joke. I gotta tell you, life without you has been hard. Hard has been bad. Bad has been rough. Kinky, because it's a setup. He says it's been rough, and that's kinky.
Yeah.
And it truly, like, once a week, you hear, like, ooh.
Yeah.
You're like, thank you. I did it for you.
And I'm right next to Ben Platt, and I whisper into his ear, I'm like, yes.
I freaking nailed it.
So
what about for you, Eric?
I think it is hard, because I think, as you were saying, Will, like, I think that people listen to the feeling of a song. And if
broad
it's like
strokes.
Up-tempo, they're like, oh, I should feel happy.
Right.
And maybe they remember like the chorus line or something like that. You know, like what's the title of the song. But they don't listen to lyrics as much.
Or they know every word.
Right. And then they're judging
it's
your...
Like one or the other.
Oh.
But like,
well,
I'll tell you...
Especially for a story like that, yeah.
I hate... like, we're talking obviously all about comedy. And I think of myself as a comedy person. But I hate... when going into an audition and they're like, give us a funny song. And I'm like,
There's no such
thing as a funny song without a whole show of setup and character buildup and all these things. Like, otherwise it feels like ha-cha, you know, like, and that, so I hate it so much, but it happens all the time.
Yeah,
like,
it's all bits and mugging. Yeah, it's all like jokes.
When they ask you to bring in something funny, you got to put like some totally random song that's like normally really serious. And then you just play it. Also serious, but in a comedic way, you know. But to do like a, here's a song full of jokes is never works.
Yeah, just putting your spin on something that's...
Or like you're going to sing like Noel Coward, because that's actually a song filled with jokes. Yeah. And then they're like, I know this song because it's 100 years old.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, well.
What are some of your comedic dream roles? If you could bring anybody to life on stage or screen?
I love Paul Rudnick plays.
Yeah.
I think he is so hilarious. I would love to do a play of his.
Mm-hmm. What are a couple of Paul Rudnick's plays? I'm going to show my ignorance there.
Most Fabulous Story Ever Told.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. He just says, and he's such a brilliant writer, and I'm crazy about him.
Will?
I love Bat Boy. Bat Boy is like my favorite musical. And it's very much a dream role. It's like it's like my favorite. It's like, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's in there in the process of bringing her on
He's
back.
He's called me.
Yeah, this is now an official casting pitch for Will Roland.
Please give me a ring.
In the new Bat Boy. You can reach him at 555-555-55 or just hang out at the Dear Evan Hansen stage door.
Right.
How about you, Eric?
I mean, I hate... You get this question a lot, like just in general, like, what's your dream role? My conventional answer, which is true, but I say it all the time, is like, I like to think that my dream role hasn't been written yet. And like,
I love that.
That like, I like to create new work. And so like, I know that's
Jen just rolled her eyes on out the door.
But like, I like to think that somewhere someone will write an original character that will be like super funny,
no,
but
true,
just
like
isn't.
Originating a role.
Yeah, that's the most fun.
All right, friends, I know you love Broadway, and I can only imagine that if you're anything like me, you love a good vacation. So why not combine the two and take a Broadway themed vacation with Playbill? Playbill Travel has been hosting the biggest fans of Broadway all over the world on incredible week-long cruises that get you up close and personal with the biggest stars of Broadway. I'm not joking. One night you can hear an amazing and intimate performance by, I don't know, let's say Tony Award winner and gorgeous human being Christine Ebersole, and the next morning you'll be going on an incredible excursion through Iceland with her. If you don't believe me, check out PlaybillTravel.com to take a look at Playbill's latest cruise up the Rhone River in France, where guests and Broadway stars had the time of their lives. Playbill Travel has three amazing cruises lined up between now and July of next year, so head to PlaybillTravel.com to book your soon-to-be most favorite vacation ever. One of the things we enjoy so very much here on Playbill Presents the Broadway Cast is we get an opportunity to reach out and talk to people who are creating theater all over the country and all over the world and get to have a little discussion with them. So today we have a very special guest who his name is Christopher, and he is in Westchester, Pennsylvania, and I believe he's doing Spelling Bee, but we're going to reach out to Christopher right now.
Yay!
Yay! Bring us Christopher.
I love
Have that boy washed and sent to my room. Carol Shelley used to say that when I was in Wicked with Carol Shelley, and she, on occasion, would just demand that a boy was washed and sent to a room, and I just thought that was the most magnificent thing I'd ever heard.
So funny.
Christopher, are you there?
Hey, I am.
Hi, Christopher. It's Ben Cameron. You're on the Broadway Cast. I'm sitting here with Eric Peterson, Jen Lyon, and Will Roland.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Christopher.
Hello, Christopher.
So we are. We understand that you're out there doing a show. We want you to tell us where you are and what you're working on.
I am in a production of the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee.
Yes. Now, I think that resonates with our panel here.
And it's in Westchester, Pennsylvania, which is right outside of Philadelphia.
I love that show, Christopher. I was in that first national tour of Spelling Bee. We played Philadelphia.
Oh, that's crazy.
If you saw it, it was really good. I was particularly spectacular in that production, in that city. I played Barfay. It's a super fun show.
Christopher, who do you play?
I'm playing in Leif Koneybear. Yes.
Oh, precious treasure.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Now, you have a connection to...
I love Jesse Tyler Ferguson, who did it on the Broadway. Yeah. I did my first professional show with him. We did a musical in Philadelphia at the Wilma Theater. Yeah.
The circle is becoming tremendously full.
Are you in previews? Are you in rehearsal? What's happening?
We're in rehearsal right now. We've been rehearsing for a couple weeks now, and it opens August 10th and runs through August 13th.
That's so a long run. How do you think you're going to be able to sort of like keep it fresh?
Do you have a physical therapist that you're working with? Do you have a vocal coach?
Get a lot
coach?
Of PT slots. You know?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. I'll tell you, one of the funnest parts, Christopher, is when you bring those audience members up, but don't let them try to steal the show, because they think it's their moment to shine.
Look for boring people.
And they will, you want really, that's true. Mm, that's like when we would do it, they would look for the most boring people. Don't get the people that are like, I'd be great in this show.
Oh, yeah.
They will try to. Like spell things wrong. Like you'll give them the word cat and they'll spell it like RAF, and they're like, but then it messes up the whole rhythm of what you're supposed to be doing. So that's my advice. Get
Christopher,
boring people.
Hear him now, believe him later. That's the truth.
Yeah. Avoid people who think they're going to be discovered in that moment.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
This is not how do you deal with that if somebody tries to hijack the show that you've brought into an interactive moment?
Well, the two people at the desk, they're really in charge of that. So if we had somebody that was causing a scene, and we normally, maybe they were in the slot to last longer in the show, we would just kind of adjust it on the fly and then ding them out. Because we would have words that they're not real words, so they couldn't be spelled correctly. And then we'd ding them out and then get him off the stage.
Oh, that's very clever.
Oh, that's smart.
That's a wonderful backup plan. Yeah.
Well engineered.
Yes. Are you going to do that, Christopher?
Yes, hopefully. I mean, I'm interested to see how they will tackle, especially during like Tech Week, how you can like integrate the audience aspect of it without having an audience there.
Hopefully the theater has some interns.
Right. Yeah, maybe they could paper the house
or bring like your parents in and stuff like that to be volunteer spellers.
We'll grab the physical therapist and
the vocal coach.
Or you could go to a hobo camp and see if there's any takers.
Yeah. Hobos are great.
Yeah, exactly.
A sandwich.
Yeah.
Have you seen
good
Annie?
With that weighing down there, Bindle?
Oh, I'm just so happy we got to hear the words hobo camp today. I was afraid we'd get to the broadcast without it happening.
Almost made it.
Christopher, do you have any questions for our panel?
I do actually have a question for Will.
Oh, I'm Will.
I knew it.
It's you.
Of course.
Jen's pissed. She feels rejected.
Yeah, you made an enemy today.
Okay, all right.
I'm curious what your thoughts are on this whole controversy right now with Ben and the stage door and what the lady had tweeted and whatnot.
Oh, well, you know what, Chris?
You know what? I'm gonna answer this question, but I'm going to start by saying that we sat down before this program started. And I said, the only thing I'm not going to talk about is this tweeting nonsense. No, but I am going to answer it. I think that I stand with what Ben Platt said, which is that we as actors, especially people who are doing shows, you know, we're 6 months in at this point, and our primary responsibility is to the show. And when you buy a ticket to the show, you expect to see a good show. And so if, you know, for example, what Ben is doing in that show is like ridiculous. I mean, I've never seen anyone do anything like what he does 8 times a week. So if he's like not going to, and it takes like, we have hundreds of people out there and sometimes it takes like 20 minutes to get through that. And he doesn't want to catch anything if anybody's sick and they brought like Ebola from Egypt. Uh-huh. And like beyond that, like he also, you know, there's like a million reasons for him to say like, I'm just going to get in my car, not speak for 18 hours and then do the play. So that's how I feel about it. I'm in big support. But you know, we love our fans and we love when we get to interact with them at the stage door, but also it can be very tiring. Especially after a long
time. Of course it's very tiring, and actors aren't property.
Yeah, that's
for sure.
You don't own them. And they just busted their ass for 2.5 hours. Yeah. Let them alone. Wave or something.
Wave. Yeah, I feel bad about it. It's a bad apple situation where there's like just a few people out there who treat us like meat and property, and they kind of ruin it for everybody.
I wonder sometimes if people just don't really get the distance there. I think that sometimes people think, you know, if you're looking at you on stage, it's like looking at you on TV. So you're mine.
It's not malicious. It's just fun.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, you just work for 2 hours every night. How
fun.
But like, it's work, man.
Yeah. All right, tell us one more time which theater company where this is all happening. One more time, Chris.
Bravo Theater Company in Westchester, Pennsylvania, and it's going to be August 10th through August 13th at Limelight Performing Arts Center.
Yes. Well,
that's awesome. Right. If you're listening out there, friends, get out there and support theater in your local community. Guys, what would you say has been the one greatest piece of advice that you've received from somebody about comedy, show business, what have you?
Be nice to everybody.
Yeah.
Be nice to everybody. You never know where they're going to show up next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jen Lyon.
Don't be an asshole and learn how to time your business. Mm-hmm. That's
I love the timing the business.
Yeah. It being nice and like, I mean, I always tell, I'm like, you just, there's no room for assholes in this. And if you like come prepared, you come on time and you're nice to work with, eventually it works out.
Yeah.
And
I love
inflect
that.
Upward at the end of your phrases.
Always.
Oh.
Because it carries the energy to the next line.
Oh, let's try it. Let's say... Let's all go see Come From Away.
Let's try it the bad way first.
Okay, great.
Let's all go see Come From Away.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like
Let's all go see Come From Away.
Okay, that sounds swell. Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
I'll meet you there.
Yeah. Okay, sure. What's coming down the pike? Eric Peterson, I know that your time is awfully full.
Sure.
Right now, each other's week at the Winter Garden.
Yeah, definitely come see us in the Winter Garden doing School of Rock. We're running till the end of time, supposedly. So it's a good show, and that we, just for all you younger people out there and parents, we have earlier shows on Mondays and Tuesdays for school nights, even though it's summer now. So we start at 7 on those days.
Marvelous. So, Jen Lyon, what do you want the people to know?
I'm on this TV show called Claws every Sunday night at 9. Mayhap you will watch it. And we'll get a second season, so I won't have to work in the theater. No, I'm just kidding. I know.
No, then you can come back and work in the theater.
It's just like
Jen Lyon in.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Now that another I got revival more TV. Of Sylvia.
Exactly. We got to do it. We have to.
It'd
it's
be great.
Right.
Yeah.
I just did this little movie with Ethan Hawke and Josh Hamilton that I did Coast Utopia with. It's called Blaze. It's about this country singer named Blaze Foley that not a lot of people know about. And I sort of play against type for once, very Southern, trashy, drug problem. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a stretch. You might want to check it out.
Well,
I'm in this show called Dead Edward Howard eight times a week at I think Howard. We're at the Broadhurst. No, we're at the Music Box Theater. In addition to that, I want to plug my friend Jen Tepper's series, New Writers at 54 Below.
Great.
They're doing concerts like, I don't know, they're probably like every Sunday and Monday. I'm doing two or three of them. I'm definitely doing Sam Salmond and Kaylee Marshall, but there's all sorts of great writers presenting new work. I love New Musical Theater more than anything in the world, so you should too. Go to that series of concerts and go to Dear Evan Hansen in the fall.
Great.
When you can get tickets.
Whenever you get a ticket. Yeah. So sometime in 2021. You guys, thank you so much for being with us here today. This has been an awful lot of fun. Hey. I want to say thank you so much to our panel, Eric Peterson, Jen Lyon, and Will Roland. Ooh. This is your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, saying, have a great show. We can clap. It's okay. We can clap for it. Oh, bravo. Yes. And make sure you join us next week for our diversity panel with Tony nominees Saikon Sangblo, Ramin Karimloo, and the Book of Mormon's own Derek Williams. Can't get enough of the Broadway cast? Well, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio. And while you're at it, follow us on all...